the Treasury Star Parade. Under the personal direction of William A. Bacher, with Al Goodman and his orchestra, and Henry Hall in a special presentation called So Long, Son. In the Chicago Daily News of January 8th, and reprinted in the April issue of Reader's Digest, this year of 1942, there appeared a short article by Howard Vincent O'Brien on the reflections of a father as his son leaves for the Army. That article we are privileged to present today in a special radio adaptation played by Mr. Henry Hull.
My son has gone to war. Came home from school one day, burst in the front door, threw his bag on the floor.
Why, for goodness sake, son, is something the matter?
Hello, Mom. No, I just thought I'd come home for a day or so, that's all.
Well, what?
I could hear him talking to his mother downstairs. I could hear her worried voice and his joshing laughter. Then he came bounding up the stairs, three at a time, clomped down the hall and banged into my study. Hello, Dad, he said.
Hello, Dad. Busy? Can I come in for a minute?
Hello, son. Well, what are you doing home from school? Did you get the sack or something?
No, no such luck. No, I came home because I wanted to talk to you.
Talk to me? It's strange how those words can create havoc in a parent's mind. A thousand questions, a thousand worried anticipations spring to his mind and clutch at his heart. But usually you're pretty casual about it, and you say, all right, what's on your mind, son?
Wait a minute till I light up the old pipe.
I sat, waited, and watched him. He's a fine-looking lad. I felt myself getting kind of funny inside, and proud of him. And yet somehow a little frightened, too. And you have them, you accept them, they're yours, and suddenly they're grown up. And mysteriously, not yours anymore. They're not anyone's. They belong to themselves. His pipe began to draw, and he sprawled out on the couch and blew a huge smoke ring to the ceiling. I couldn't help smiling. There was a minute's silence, and then...
Dad, I want to enlist.
What? I couldn't believe my ears. Maybe I didn't want to believe them. Back in my mind, of course, I'd known that all this had to happen someday. But he was only a kid. I tried not to show what I was feeling. I tried to be casual and easy about it. But my voice sounded strange in my own ears. Enlist, son, I said.
Yes, Dad.
Well, don't you think you might wait till you finish college? Or at least you're old enough to register? Now, if it were a question of the draft... But suddenly he was leaning forward, talking. The pipe in his hand, unheeded, went out. He was talking about things I'd never realized he'd even thought about. Things like peace and democracy... And the rights of free men.
Don't you see, I've got to go now. I want peace, Dad. The kind of peace we've always had here in America. Peace and freedom. Without that, what good is living?
There was finality in the way he said it. A finality at once grim and gentle. I said no more about waiting. His mother took it better than I. She stood quite still for a moment when he told her. Then she said...
Of course. If you feel you should, then you must. You must do what you think's right, son.
That was all. No tears, no fuss. And I wondered for a moment. Women are strange. They get at the heart of things so much quicker and more surely than men. So the boy went down and enlisted, and, well, I went with him to give him the go sign. Then he went back to school to wait. It didn't take long, and he was back home again. The house was the scene of furious activity for two whole days. Then we found ourselves, just the three of us, alone in the front room. A car drove up outside and honked. There was no band, no ceremonial. It wasn't even dramatic. He said,
well, I guess that's for me.
And he picked up his bag, and then his mother said,
you haven't forgotten your gloves.
No, Mom, they're in my pocket. So long, Dad.
Good luck. And that was all. Another boy gone off to war. After the door had closed behind him, his mother turned quickly, and she went into the kitchen, and I went upstairs to what had been his room. It was in a worse chaos than usual. His dancing pumps and a tennis racket and his phonograph records, letters, invitations to parties. He now would not attend. A packed steamer trunk stood marked not to be opened. His clothes in the closet left for his mother to put into mothballs. On the closet floor, his prep school shoes. Maybe you could remember. You know, the curled up toes, the more they curled, the better. These were turned up as far as he could curl them. On the shelf, there was a It was a policeman's hat. The Lord knows where it came from or how it got there. And hanging on a hook, a Kanaka bathing suit, which she had bought when we were in Hawaii on vacation together. And there was his prep school sweater with his letters on it. And on his desk, two of his dearest treasures, a miniature suit of armor, and draped over it, a pair of dress epaulets, gold and shining, from the 7th Regiment of National Guard, New York. I turned around slowly. There were girls' pictures all over the walls, it seemed to me. Then I realized that his mother was standing at the door watching me. it's funny, I said. It's funny how a boy will plaster his walls with all these things, isn't it, huh?
There aren't really so many, only 5 or 6. Now, you go on back to your study and let me clean up in here.
And so I turned and went out the door down the hall to my own room. I stood in the door a minute, looking at a framed photograph on the wall. It was of a little boy with his toothless grin framed in curls. The same boy who had just taken my hand and said, "Well, so long, Dad." Not much time, I thought, between the taking of that picture and the slamming of the front door. And then suddenly, a queer thing happened. Objects came to life, whispered to me. They led me all over the house. The house was full of soft voices. I tried to listen to them, to tell what they were saying.
Fainter, I know what you're thinking. You're wondering where in tarnation the lad picked up a policeman's hat. Well, never mind now. That's quite a story, quite a story. Maybe someday we'll be after telling it to you.
Company, halt! Epaulettes, eh? The soldiers dress epaulettes, all gold braid and glittering fringe. Symbols, too. Symbols of the bravery and courage and glory of manhood. The strong ideals of free men.
Good, good, good.
Hello. You don't know me. I'm just a picture on the wall. But like his mother, I kissed him goodbye and told him to go. Because I knew he had to go.
Oh, you knew it too, did you?
A Kanaka bathing suit. I was his favorite. Remember? We were all there together. Such fun. The peaceful blue skies, the warm sunshine, the turquoise tropical waters, the laughter, the careless laughter and lightheartedness of Honolulu, the towering mass of Diamond Head, and the dull drone of peaceful plains, and the majestic beauty of the big ships in the great harbor. You remember, and so does he.
Oh, yes, indeed, I do remember. I remember so much, and yet somehow know so little about this boy of mine. All we had left were the little things, the voices and symbols he had left behind. They seemed to me to be good voices, good symbols, and their whispering led me up the stairs into the attic. I found there a box of tin soldiers, little martial figures that he used to drill and march all up and down his room. All bent now, with the paint chipped off and faded, piled carelessly into a box. Prophetic symbols, these. And a football helmet, very small. He only played football when he was very young. He never grew to the regulation football size. And there was a homemade guitar, and a stamp album, and a penny bank with the lid pried off. And so the voices led me onto a folder stuffed with letters, papers, report cards. Among them, the wail of an exasperated teacher.
Though he looks like an angel, I can assure you.
A baptismal certificate. A ribbon won in a track meet. A photograph taken on the memorable first day of long pants. How do you like him, I'd said.
All right, I guess all right.
And his face beaming, but his voice shy. His heart a little frightened at this threat of approaching manhood. He really didn't know, but he thought it was all right. His first long pants. I sat down and thought our time had flown. Why, it was only yesterday when I'd held him in my arms. And that somehow made me remember all the scoldings I'd given him, the preachments, the exhortations to a virtue and wisdom I did not myself possess. And then I thought, what fools we are with our children, always plotting what we shall make of them, always planning for a future that never comes, always intent on what they may be, never accepting what they are. And so, before we know it, they grow to manhood and womanhood, and the responsibility of a world falls heavily upon their shoulders.
Shoulders we would have thought too young, too inexperienced to carry such burdens. But when we would delay them, save them for a few days or weeks or months, that quiet smile, that firm voice...
No, Dad. I've made up my mind. I've got to go. I want peace, Dad. The kind of peace we've always had here in America. Peace and freedom. Without them, what good is living?
Yes. Yes, we have a right to feel proud of them. And as I stood there in my attic, my brain full of the voices that had come alive out of my son's past, I could hear other voices, strange, fanatic voices, crying across the sea.
America is soft, degenerate. Democracy is outmoded, outborn. The youth of America have no ideals, no enthusiasm. The youth of America is soft, degenerate.
America! The youth of America degenerate or soft? No. I've looked into my son's eyes. I've heard his voice. Without peace and freedom, what good is living? Why the whisperings in my quiet attic ring clearer and stronger in the world than all of the shouted fanaticism, the screaming nationalism, the diving of planes and the roar of guns and churning of great ships in the sea. All their voices are quiet. All their departures are without drama. And that's just the way it should be. Their enemies were trained for war and victory. Our boys were trained for peace. But theirs is the greater strength, the greater courage, because it grows out of themselves and their own firm realization of the task before them. When these others fail, when they find they are not invincible, when that happens, the strength of men who want peace is the greater strength, and their quiet whispering in 10 million homes, the strongest voice in the world. My son has gone to war. Well, Curlyhead, you're a man now. I hated to see you go, but I wouldn't have halted you. No, not if I could. I can't pretend I'm not sad, but I'm proud, too. So long, son.
Call the roll of American heroes in this war. Already their names fill long columns of close-set type. Men who have met the enemy and beaten him in action. Beyond the call of duty. We, comfortable at home, have thrilled at accounts of their bravery that knows no bounds. How would you and I meet such a call? Here is a way we can find out. Our country is calling us right now to perform a very simple and a very positive duty. We are asked to, we must invest in war bonds up to 10% of our income. That means 10% of all our income. Wages, overtime, bonuses, rent, dividends, and profits. As good Americans, as patriotic citizens, naturally we will fill our quotas. But why not go beyond the call of duty? We can do more. Let's do it. Make our war bond buying stand out. That's one way we can show our appreciation for the glorious achievements of America's present-day heroes. Men who know duty as something to go beyond. The United States Treasury Department thanks the distinguished artists who gave their talents to this transcribed performance. Mr. Henry Hall and his son, Private Shelley Hall, who was granted special leave from Fort Dix to appear on this broadcast, Howard Vincent O'Brien, the Chicago Daily News, and the Reader's Digest for permission to use their material as the basis for this program, and also this station for the use of its facilities. The orchestra and chorus were under the direction of Al Goodman, writing by Malcolm Eaton and Violet Atkins. This is Larry Elliott speaking.